Accession number 30636, Mr. Morgan Barker, Reel 10. Now, you're saying you just arrived at Southampton, you had the customs check.
Yes. So
this is June, you reckon?
Yes, Joe.
So what happened then? The lorry journey?
It was a lorry. They come in, three tonners, picked us all up, load us in the back of it. Of course, as I said, they give us hard boiled eggs, corned beef sandwiches, a drink. So we had an NCO in the front and a driver. And our NCO said, any chance of pulling to a cafe so we can have a hot cup of tea and something to drink? We've had nothing since about 4 o'clock this morning. And all we got is these hard boiled eggs and corned beef sandwiches. So he said, yeah, I know one or two places on the route. Because otherwise we'd have been on the train going home or going back to the barracks. So, of course, going along, we pulled into this cafe, about three or four lorries. And it was a transport cab. When we got out, the bloke went in there. He said, he won't serve you. So we said, well, yeah. No, he don't want any army personnel in here. He's got his own customers he's got to look after. So we thought, well, that's charming. Then we must have been about, 30 of us. Hold on. So it goes along a little bit. Got fed up with the eggs, so we're tossing the eggs out and kept the corned beef. Paul's in the next one, so he says, I've got about 30 lads just come off a ship from Korea. Bloke said, well, if you can wait 5 minutes, he said, I've got some staff coming in and we'll, what's that? So we wait about 10, 15 minutes. And he said, right, now take your time. No rush. He said, you'll all get served. And we was having like egg and bacon, fried bread, fried tomatoes, chips, mugs of tea, slices of bread and butter and all that business. And he done well out of us. He completed the old 30 members. Then we was back in the lorry. So they took us then to the Tower of London. Went into the Tower of London because that was the base for the Royal Fusiliers and that. So, because we had some Royal Fusiliers on board with us, they, when they got to the Tower of London, they on. We got off, so this bloke come up and said, who are you lot? So he said, ex-Essex, Northamptons. So he said, well, I don't want you in my tower, he says. You can bloody well get back on that wagon, he said, and go to your country retreats, Brentwood. So, of course.
Worley Barracks.
Worley Barracks. So we gets in the wagon and trudles off down the road, arrives at Brentwood Worley Barracks. And they're just getting ready for the morning parade and roll call. So there we all come in, a bit scruffy, not washed, needed to show. And as the lorry's pulled in, we unloaded everything, stood to one side, and there was all lined up there. I didn't see my brother then, but shout out, Private Barker. I said, yes, sir. He said, what's your name? I said, Barker, ME2289697. Just come back from Korea. So he said, I've got a Barker. He said, do you know a bloke named Charlie Barker? I said, yeah, it's my brother. He said, oh, no, not another one. He said, he's just started his basic training. So he said, we don't know what we're going to do with you because we've got no space, really. He said, if you do, we'll give you a mattress to sleep on the floor overnight. So the next morning, comes out, calls all the name out, and they give us 14 days pass to go home. He said, after 14 days, you will report back to here and you will be demobbed. But remember, you will be on standby, Z Reserve. So I got the pass, came home. My mum was surprised to see me because she didn't exit. Mum and Dad didn't exit. As I walked down the garden, I got my boots, I got my kit bag in it. And we had a dog called Peggy. She was a little crossbreed collie. Mum opened the door. She came out snapping at my heels. And I said to her, hello, Peg, what are you doing? And she looked, wagged her tail. Then she was up and all over me type of thing. Came in, Mum made a cup of tea, asked me questions, my brothers and sisters and that. When they came home from school, was asking me questions. I fell asleep on a settee, and when I woke up, Peg had crawled up and laid in a sofa. And for that, all that time, she would never leave me. She was always there and all that. Of course, I went out. People say, hello, how are you? And of course, I had the Korean United Nations medal ribbon up then. We hadn't received the medal. So I had that up, and I said, cool, look at that. Here's an hero coming home. Look, he's got a medal ribbon and all that business. I went back down to my old firm, saw a couple of the people down there who I knew, they said, your job's still open if you want it. So I said, yes, okay. And then I went back to Worley Barracks and got demobbed. And my brother.
Now, what happened when you were demobbed? What's the procedure?
Well,
that was in July, was it?
Yes, yeah. We was quite, shall we say, affluent then, because the money we saved up in Korea with these £10 amounted to somewhere about £400-£500. So we was quite well off, because you had nowhere to spend it, you know, and all this business.
Well, that's a lot of money then.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. So I said, right. So as you come in, so you emptied your kit bag out, and you had to hand the kit bag. As I said, when we got our kit back in Korea and that, a lot of stuff was missing. So therefore, it comes in losses and barrack room damages. We said we didn't have any barrack room damage because we were sleeping in tents. Oh, yeah. But according to the report, one or two tents were ripped and all this business. You've lost this, you've lost that. And they took about £100 off of each of us type of thing with lossage of kit. Because what they normally do is you pay for the one you lose and you pay for the one you're going to get. Because we wasn't getting any, it still went through the same procedure. Otherwise, it mucked up the QM store, really. So once that was all added in, we still kept our uniforms. But he said, what I want you to do now is go home and come back with civilian clothes. But what I forgot to mention, while we was out in Japan, we all had suits made. Beautiful gabardine suits, jackets, trousers, and they was sent home, believe it or not, to our addresses. So when I got home, Mum said, this packet arrived to put this gabardine suit on. Silk lining, a shirt, tie, and you look the bee's knees. So when you went back to barracks, all the blokes were saying, cool, look at that lot. Look what they've got and all that. So we're saying, yeah, when you go abroad, you'll find these things. You'll be able to pick up all these things if you're lucky enough. So, of course, got our suits. That was it. Received our pay. Don't forget, report to the TA Centre in Ilford, where you will be lodged as a Z reservist for an emergency. And that was about it.
Yeah, so what did you do? You come out of the army, and this is July 75.
Yeah.
What were you going to do? What about your job?
Well, they told me my job would be there, so I thought, right, go back. I went back. After being out in the open for 2 years, I went back down the firm. I found it noisy with all the saws, machinery. It was dusty and dirty. A number of people there deferred from going into the army. Some served an apprenticeship, which I could have done. And they, by now, these had a job as like foreman or overseer. And of course, you go in there, hello, mate. You're supposed to be doing a job, ain't you, mate? Got no time to stand around. This has got to be done. And of course, I said, hold on. I said, I've just come back out of the army doing my national service. What about you? I got deferred. So I said, well, have a bit of patience. I said, I can't see me sticking this. So I said to my mum, so I stuck it for a while. Brother came home. He went back to his job on the railway. So I was talking with him. So I said, can't. He said, well, why don't you come on the railway? He said, they're looking for blokes, he said. So I said, yeah. He said, well, you've done a bit of woodworking. Chippy's mate, carpentry and that. So I said, well, all right. So I went up for the interview. The money was low on the railway, but it was regular. So went up for the interview, passed the interview, passed the medical, and I got a job as walkway repair and telegraph pole repairs. And that's how I started off on the railway. And I've done 40 years on there.
Now, what? Just sketch out your career very briefly for us. So did you always do the walkway and telegraph?
No. I started doing the walkways, and I knew more about wooding and fixing what they call walk runs over cables, over, because a lot of stuff then was mechanical. It was rodding, wheels, pulleys, and we built walkways over them. And I knew more about that than what the bloke who I was his mate done, because he used to flock off to the pub, and I didn't drink a lot, so I'd be working away. And the governor came along one day and said, Where's Fred? I said, well, I don't know. I think he's gone to Timber. He said, don't worry, lad. I know where he is. When I got him put out, he said, this lad's putting you to shame. So I said, I don't think I'll stick this much longer, Gov. I said, what are they doing over there? And this was the telegraph side. They was running out cables, going up telegraph poles, fixing the overhead lines on the copper wires. I said, that seems a bit more interesting to me. So he said, are you prepared to go to school? So I said, well, I said, the education's not great, but I'm a good learner, quick learner. Right, he said. So I went to school. I learned to climb telegraph poles with climbers, strap myself down, put pots on and J's on, which the porcelain pots screwed on, how to fix the lines to the pots, how to fix cables and run them down the post. And there was blokes there terminating cables and testing them out. I thought, I was talking to one bloke like that. I said, that's interesting, mate. He said, yeah. He said, we can't get people to do them because it's a cold job. He said, we're taking down what you're putting up, telegraph poles, and putting it into cable, especially where it goes over bridges. Because going over bridges, you used to have 80-foot telegraph poles to carry the cables over bridges. And what they was doing is cutting them short there, diverting them down and over the other side. I said, yeah. So I went to school, passed out the training in the school, how to terminate cables, how to mega them, how to insulate them, wiretap them, pair them up, test them out, what bits of equipment they went to. And then I progressed and got a job on shift work as a technician. And my money then was, this was what, 1960, and it was £10.15 a week as a technician's mate. And I stayed on that for 40 odd years. Then I got a technician's job. Then the last few years, I wound up at the training school at Ilford for 10 years. And I didn't, I got a inspector's job, but it was a grade B inspector, helping to teach in the classrooms and train people. I couldn't get a fully inspector's job because I didn't know about computers. And my argument with that was, how can a computer put a job right when a train gets delayed, smashes up points, signals, cuts through cable? How can a computer tell you what to do? So the bloke who took over the training school, Keith, he was a university bloke with a degree, but not in railways, it was a degree in ceramics and all this business. So me and him had a clash, personality clash straight away. He didn't like me because the blokes would say to me, well, what do you think about this, Malk? How would you do this, Malk? So he used to say, I'm in charge of the school, you come and ask me. So they would ask him a question, he wouldn't know, so it got referred back to me again. So I said, well, can you tell me what a computer is good? I said, like the other, what's the name? I said, when I was out on the track, we went down to Ripple Lane Marshalling Yard, where some goods wagon came off, busted up a couple of cranks and rodding, and cut through cables. I said, we was out there for near enough 24 hours renewing it. I said, now what would the computer do for me? He said, it would tell you how many manpower hours it should take, what equipment it was need, and how many men you need. I said, no, you're talking a load of bull, Governor, because you won't know until you get there. You won't know how much equipment you need until you get there, and how many hours it's going to take. But if the computer says this, then that's how long it should take you. The computer says 10 hours, and it took us 24 hours. Because what they didn't realise on the computer is you've got to take the wagons away that's come over. So that means a crane coming from Stratford, which took time, load Stanley trucks upright, take the buckled rails out, put new sleepers in, run out new cables, and that all took time and manpower. Those things you couldn't rush because of injuries and all that business.
So that was a career and a successful career. You were happy with your work.
Yeah.
Now tell me about your time on with the TA. Which TA regiment did you serve and where did you have to go?
I was working on the railway and I lost my dad with cancer. I'm talking to a chap there. He says to me, hello mate, what's up with you? I said, oh, I just lost my dad with cancer. So he said to me, you've been in the army, didn't you? So I said, yeah. So did you ever thought of joining the TA?
Now, hang on, but you had 2 years, didn't you have 2 years on Z Reserve with the TA
first? No, this is just, what they do, what they call 3 and 5. You do 3 years, 5 years with the colours, so you're on standby if needed. then you get 3 years where you just wait and hope nothing happens. But you call back to do a training, like fire rifle, keep your standards up.
Now, when was that, though? So when you left the army, you did that?
Yes.
Oh, tell me about that, then, first, before we come back.
Well, when they did reserves, say... If
who were you with when you went back?
Essex. It was the Essex TA at Ilford.
Which battalion was that?
No, it, not battalion. It was just called the Essex TA. It didn't have a battalion, the reservist. It was Gordonsfield, Ilford.
Which field?
Gordonsfield, Ilford. Training centre. And you reported there... Once every 3 months, you went there for a brief talk. You went there to keep your hand in with a rifle, brain gun, first aid. Anything new that came out, any new weapons, any new tactics. You only went there about, what, 2 or 3 times a year.
And what was the training like?
It was about 2 hours. Really, all you done was half hour, and the rest of the time was spent in the Nuffy. They say, well, they're talking about NBC, nuclear biological wars. You will be trained to put suits on and all. And that was mainly it. Other than that, it was just report there, sign it, and you used to get paid for it, about £2.
And you did that for how many years?
3 years.
So that's 55 to 58?
Yeah.
And anything else? You didn't have to go for an annual camp or anything?
No.
So, and you were never called up?
No.
And anything else after that, before you joined the TA itself?
No.
Now, tell me about the TA then. You were saying this chap...
One of the colleagues...
Your dad had died.
My dad had died of cancer, and I was a bit down. And this chap said to me, you look a bit glum. I said, yeah, I just lost my dad of cancer. So he said to me... I knew he used to go to the TA unit, but I didn't actually know which one. So he said to me, ever thought of joining the TA? I said, well, I'm old. I'm getting on now, I said.
And when was this?
Oh, God, about 19...
When did your dad die? That helped you?
Oh, mine's gone a bit blank on that. Molly will be out to it. But put it this way, when I joined the TA, I had been there some time, and... Falklands. When was the Falklands? Do you remember that?
82.
About 82. So this is going back about 82, 80, 79-ish.
Oh, so that's really late on.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so tell me how you joined there. So what was he saying? He said that you should think of it.
Yeah. He said because they need people in the Royal Engineers with railway experience. So I said, well, I'm getting on a bit now, type of thing. So he said, well, you're not all that old, really. He said, providing you pass the medical, you've got a trade behind you. He said, railways, and they're looking for railways. So he said, the reason I'm asking you, he said, because if we take people down to a weekend camp, me, he said, introducing you, I get £10 bounty. And that was the come on. So I said, well, what do I do get out of it? He said, well, you get a good night drink up. So I said, oh. So I said, well, I don't know whether I should go or not. So I said to Molly, what do you reckon? Shall I go? She said, well, give it a try, type of thing. So went down for the weekend. It was Mini Manor Cove, Gibraltar Barracks, Farnborough. And
this is a weekend camp.
This was just a weekend introductory camp.
And this is the Royal Engineers, is it?
Yeah, Royal Engineers. It was Royal Engineers 507 Railway Squadron. So I went down there with him. So George's name was. So I went down with George.
And where were they based? Sorry.
Mini Manor Cove, Farnborough, Gibraltar Barracks.
No, but that's where they went on. But where were they normally based?
That is the normal
base. Oh, right, right.
That was a recruitment and the base. And it was an old engineer's barracks because down there they had petrol, water, bridging, house repairs, demolition groups, Bailey Bridge groups, and it was all in this Farnborough area. And, of course, gets down there, arrives, given a bed and all this business, bought overnight kit, washing and shaving, and went down to their Naffy, had a few drinks and sitting there talking to them. Quite a few blokes had been in the forces before. So next morning, we went down Friday night, Saturday morning, was taken into a big room. Then they said, you know, stand up, say your name, who you serve with, where do you serve, and what job you do. So I said, stood up, told them I'd been to Germany, Korea, Japan, worked on a railway, I'm a signal fitter. Bloke said, you've done any P-Way work, that's permanent way work. I worked alongside the P-Way, I said, helping to change rail, sleepers, connect them up. Until they'd done the connecting up of railway sleepers, rail, the signal people couldn't do any work. So he said, oh, quite. I said, what's the width of a railway? I said, 4'8½". And what type of rails have you got? I said, bullhead, flat bottom. You got spikes, you got plates, you got screws. Oh, he said, oh, you seem to know what you're doing. He said, pass your medical. He said, we'll give you 2 weeks to make up your mind whether you want to do it. So Jules said to me, if you do sign up, you want to do what I do. He said, on the railway, you don't get time off really to do TA, but if you do, they cast it as an annual leave. So you would only get a certain amount of your wages and the army would pay the other amount. But if you do it the way I do it, I take a fortnight's holiday. So I get my full fortnight and also I get paid by the army. So I said, oh, so come back. I thought, yeah, I'll have a go. I told our inspector, he said, he was a captain in the Royal Engineers. So he said, good idea, he said. So I went down there, went to the farm, but you bought a boat, weekend camp, done a roll call, had a medical, done a bit of drill. Then they do what's known as trade testing. They have their own section, they had a section of rail and all this business, so took us out in a group who's worked on the railways, about 3 of us, I think. One bloke was a loco driver, another bloke was a signal bloke, worked in a signal box, and I was a, what's his name? So the loco bloke was took away to about logos, the signal box bloke was, and I stood with this chap, court boy was, so he says to me, what do you know? When I was speaking to him, he said, do you know what, mate? He said, you should be here and I should be there. He said, because I'm a regular soldier in the engineers. He said, and you know more than me. He said, and I've got 2 stripes. So I said, well, that's one of them things. And what we used to do is go away on regular. Then what we used to do is have 10 days away camp. Go to various parts of what's name? The country.
Now, hang on. What was the composition of the unit then? What was 507?
It was 507 Railway Squadron.
Now, what was that?
Well, it consisted of all railway transports from P-Way, signal telegraph like me, train drivers, signal box, crane drivers, loaders and unloaders, and shuntmen who used to cut water, and it was purely railway. We were just a railway
now,
unit.
Did you have a sort of weekly drill night, or was it just these bigger camps that you had?
Just the bigger camps, that's all. Because being already trained as a soldier, done your basic training at your depots before you went in, being aboard and that, your basic military skill was still there. But what they would do every now and again is say, there's a range weekend. And you're...
Well, tell me about that. What was a range weekend? Then we'll do your annual camp.
Well, we used to go to Bisley. The range weekend was you went down there, you fired various weapons to keep your grading up and keep your hand in to get your marks, to get your pay. And you used to go down there, spend a weekend on the ranges, fire a rifle, a Bren gun. Sten gun was coming out. A new gun was coming called the Patchett. That was a Rolls-Royce version of the Sten gun. It was much better, magazine curved, much better to handle, rifle butt, the lot. And so you learnt that. Then you'll have another weekend where it would be training with this nuclear gas type of thing.
NBC training. Tell me about NBC training.
Well, NBC training, never done it, never heard of it when we was in the forces. We know about the mustard gas and all that in the first world. So this would be a 10-day camp. You would do your basic training. As I say, you've done your rifle range, so you got your marks for that. Anybody that didn't classify when you went on your 10-day camp would have to go and do it. So he gets down there. You get a lecture on these suits and about the gassing, about being a buddy-buddy system, because you put these suits on with special boots, suits. It was all kind of like a rubbery type thing. Overhead mask, breathing apparatus, and you had to do that within a certain time, because somebody would say, gas, 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 you drop everything, and had to put these suits on. You used to work in pairs, so they would check that everything was tucked down. And none of the suits were ripped, because once the suit got ripped, that was you out. And also, on top of that, what they used to do is put you in a room about the size of this. And there's about 10, 15, 20 blokes in there. Now, I've never been in it before, so what they used to do is just to do a dummy run through with you. Put you in here, set these canisters off, and it was more like a tear gas. And you had to go in there, and you had to stay in there as long as possible before running out. So that was just to get you the taste. Then they'd get you dressed up in these suits, and you would go in there, and you'd walk round and round and round, and you would have a weapon with you. But normally, if you was in a gas NBC suit, you wouldn't use any weapons because of tears. So then, right, now, then you go in there with respirators, just a respirator on. But what you had to be careful with these respirators, which some of our blokes found out, was inside the respirator, where the canister is on the side, they didn't have them down like our old gas canister on the side, there used to be a rubber patch that went over to where you breathe in to stop any moisture while it was just laying about. Of course, what some of the sergeants used to do, you pull that off, put it on, check it before you go in. But some of them would stick back on this on. When you went in there, of course, once you start to breathe, blokes were flunking out and wonder what. Or what they would do is come up and say, are you breathing okay? You used to say yes, and they would put their hands over the canister to stop you from breathing. Then after you've done that, what you would do then is they would say, take off your respirator. So you took off your respirator and you had to stand there, walk round in a circle, and as you come up to the door, stop. What's your name, rank, a number, and how old you are. Until you've said that, you couldn't go out that door. And when you went out the door, you was choking. They said, don't rub your eyes, just stand it. And that was one of the basic NBC training. What's that, B? Oh, sorry.